Good morning. So, who knows why it's important to be quiet in church? It's important to be quiet because people are sleeping. So, one time I was up here and I told a story about something that happened to me while I was riding my bike to work. Does anyone remember what happened to me in that story? What happened to me? I got a hamburger, yeah. Technically, I had a canned drink. I got a hamburger when I was sitting waiting for the bus on a different occasion, but it was thrown at me. I was riding my bike and the drink was thrown at me and a hamburger was thrown at me on a different occasion, yes. Now, for extra points, what was the point of that story in relation to the sermon or the broader point? Does anyone remember what the point was? Why I would say that possibly. Well, I honestly didn't know either. I had to go and look back on my notes. You know, it could have, you know, you could use that as a starting point for all kinds of things, right? And so if you were wondering, I spoke about humbleness and turning to God in the face of unexplained adversity. And there was also a bit about, you know, not being the kind of jerk who would throw your problems out at somebody else. But that made me think of today we have another, there's a fascinating little incident from the book of Acts. And Paul talks all night, but we have no idea what he said, right? We just know that he talked. But I think the story itself can speak to a number of larger themes. So what happens? A young man falls asleep, listening to a sermon, falls out of the window, and miraculously survives. And like I said, nothing Paul said was recorded. There's no, well, aside from his couple words there, there's no, he doesn't write a letter to the people of Troas where this occurred. But what is remembered is that this young man, Eutychus, and his unfortunate fall. Sometimes he's referred to as a boy or a teenager, but as best as I could tell from the little scholarship there was surrounding this passage, the word used to describe him would put him at 20 to 40 years old, so kind of right in my demographic. And a couple interesting points. Rather than meeting on the Sabbath, Saturday, something that's brought up about this passage is it's the first concrete reference to Christians meeting on the first day of the week, Sunday. They're there to listen to Paul and break bread, which was to partake in the Lord's Supper. And the story of falling asleep is a story I can relate to, and perhaps some others can relate to as well. Hopefully not today, but so Paul, he's been in this city for a week, and he's leaving the next day. And so he's got lots of good things to say, and everybody's excited to hear him. And he's can be very concise in his written letters, but he's not concise that night. Maybe he really wants to drive the point home when he's speaking repeatedly. So to set the stage, many lamps are lit. And so that sort of helps you kind of figure out what's to come. A lot of lamps are lit, so there's smoke, it's hot, there's lots of people there. You know, it's a prime time to fall asleep, perhaps. But another little detail of the fact that all these lamps are lit is that at the time, early Christians were often misunderstood, and they people thought of them as some kind of secretive cult, or, you know, they're meeting in secret, these Christians, what are they doing? So with all the lights on and the windows are open, it's saying they have nothing to hide, right? So they're letting their little light shine, as it were. So Eutychus, the young man in our story, whose name, coincidentally or not, translates as lucky, he's lulled asleep as Paul talks on and on. And the lamps and the people, it's obviously hot in the third floor room. So what does he do? He's getting hot and tired. He sits by the window to get some fresh air, maybe, and he drifts deeper and deeper into sleep. The next thing you know, he crashes to the ground below and is picked up dead. Paul goes down, throws himself on Eutychus, and says, "Don't be alarmed, he's alive." They go back upstairs and carry on with their eating, and Paul talks on until daylight. So scholarly opinions are also a little divided on whether Eutychus was actually dead and then brought back to life through Paul, or if he was merely unconscious, which would make him appear dead, right? But in either case, he fell three floors, and it's a miracle he survives. And the people were all greatly comforted. And the version Chris read, it had a kind of an odd phrasing, but the version that I had, it said they were comforted, but it was, I guess, kind of an odd kind of comfort. It was like a... But they are comforted that he's not the least bit comforted, or something like that, he said. Not a little comforted. So a lot comforted, perhaps. Odd way of saying that. But so I can remember as a child falling asleep on my parents' lap in church. I don't actually recall falling asleep as an adult, but there's often been times when I've drifted off into my own thoughts and likely took little away from the message. But so falling asleep in a physical sense is one thing, and it's probably easy to agree that actually falling asleep in church is probably not the best thing to do, especially in the balcony. But there's also something to be said about sleeping from a more figurative standpoint. And so by that, you know, what causes us to sleep in our lives? Like, what would turn our attention away from God and away from what's important? And so there's many things that dull our senses aside from someone talking repeatedly. You know, one thing I thought of was, you know, the time we live in is, it's age of unlimited distraction. You know, the joke is that, you know, we have a cell phone, and we can access the whole knowledge of all of history and all of human knowledge you can put in your pocket, and you can find it. And what do? We watch cat videos and play Angry Birds, right? So the Bible has much to say about sleep in a physical sense. There's lots of cases, people falling asleep. The disciples fall asleep while Jesus is praying. Jesus falls asleep while he's on a boat. And Jonah falls asleep in a boat, too. Boats rock people to sleep. But it also talks about the kind of this more figurative sense as well. And Proverbs and Paul both have a number of such things to say. In Proverbs, a couple times it, you know, talks about laziness, and laziness casts us into a deep sleep, and an idle man will suffer hunger. And Paul himself, I don't know if he wrote this after this incident with Eutychus or not, but he, as an example, in Thessalonians, he says, "You're children of the light and children of the day. We do not belong to the night or the darkness. So then, let us not be like others who are asleep, but let us be awake and sober. And so that kind of Paul's talking after Jesus. And so Jesus has a couple of things to say about this sort of falling asleep. And one such parable in Matthew, the parable of the 10 virgins. And they took their lamps to go and wait for the bridegroom. And Jesus says, 5 of them were foolish and 5 were wise. The foolish ones took their lamps, but did not take any oil with them. The wise ones, however, took oil in jars along with their lamps. Now, the bridegroom was a long time coming, and they all became drowsy and fell asleep. At midnight, the cry rang out, "Here's the bridegroom, come out to meet him." Then all the virgins woke up, trimmed their lamps. The foolish ones said to the wise, "Give us some of your oil, our lamps are going out." "No," they replied, "there may not be enough for both of us and you. Instead, go to those who sell oil and buy some for yourselves." But while they were on their way to buy oil, the bridegroom arrived. The virgins who were ready went in with him to the wedding banquet, and the door was shut. Later, the others also came. "Lord, Lord," they said, "open the door for us." But he replied, "Truly, I tell you, I don't know you. Therefore, keep watch, because you do not know the day or the hour." And then he has a similar thing to say in Mark, about a thief coming in the night. "Therefore, keep watch, because you do not know when the owner of the house will come back, whether in the evening or at midnight or when the rooster crows or at dawn. If he comes suddenly, do not let him find you sleeping. What I say to you, I say to everyone, watch." So I find the basic takeaway is to be prepared, be alert, and be ready, because no one knows when Jesus will come back. But I think that's kind of the point. In the story of the ten virgins, they all fall asleep. It's okay, they fall asleep. But 5 are prepared with the necessary oil when it's time to wake up. So the question is, are we prepared? What does it mean to be prepared? Right? We've all known probably for about a month, any day now it's going to snow, right? And all of a sudden this morning we woke up and it snowed, and you have to find the scraper for the car, and you have to find these little things. And I'm thinking myself of all kinds of things that I didn't actually do, what I probably should do this afternoon now that there's actually snow here. There's a story by Tolstoy that I think kind of makes the point of as far as the what I think is a good way to be prepared. It's a Christmas story, so now that it's snowed, it's okay to tell a Christmas story, but I'm not going to tell the whole story. And you may have heard this story before, or at least heard a version of it. I think there's kind of different versions of this same story. But I think it's a good example of what it may mean to be awake. So in this story, Papa Panov's Special Christmas is the name of the story. So Panov, he's a cobbler. He falls asleep Christmas Eve after reading the Bible, and he's wishing he could give a present to Jesus. And while he's sleeping, he has a dream. Jesus comes to him in the dream and says, "I will visit you Christmas Day." So Christmas Day comes, and while he's waiting for his special visitor, different people come to visit him, and he gives coffee to the street sweeper and soup to some beggars. And he gives a special pair of shoes to a child who needs shoes. And at the end of the day, Jesus never came. And just while he's lamenting that fact, he saw again the old road sweeper, the young mother, and her baby, and the beggars he'd fed. And as they passed, each whispered, "Didn't you see me, Papa Panov?" "Who are you?" he called out, bewildered. Then another voice answered him. It was the voice from his dream, the voice of Jesus. "I was hungry and you fed me," he said. "I was naked and you clothed me. I was cold and you warmed me. I came to you today in every one of those you helped and welcomed. So to be, as the Papa Panov, to be ready to help those around us is, I think, one good thing to take away of how to be awake. Jesus comes to us in many ways, and we're called to be ready to meet him. And on the other side, sometimes, I hate to say it, sometimes we might be the ones putting others to sleep. Maybe not in a literal sense, although that can happen on occasion, but more metaphorically, what is it we do to put others to sleep? What do we do as people or a larger church that would keep others away from God? Sometimes we can be insular or unwilling to try new ideas and stuck in our ways. And what can we do to help people from falling asleep, from helping others fall out the window, as it were? And I don't know if I necessarily have the answers to those questions, but I think it's important to ask, and it's not necessarily a matter of tweaking with formats like, do we need more guitars or drums or PowerPoints or things like that? You know, people can always try to make church more exciting, but I think the underlying message should be exciting regardless of the outer trappings, because I don't know about you, but if I'm tired, I'll fall asleep during an action movie or whatever, you know? Like, it's harder to, you know, it's easy to fall asleep when you're not engaged, but when you're engaged with others, it's harder to fall asleep, maybe, is what I'm trying to get at. And perhaps it's as simple as being awake ourselves and watchful for what's needed in the situation. So recently, I read of the creation of mega churches for atheism. I just read this past week. It's fascinating. They're calling them Sunday assemblies, and this started in the UK. It's moving to North America, and hundreds of people are coming to attend these churches without God and for the community aspects of a group and singing together and helping people in the neighborhood and that kind of thing. And that's something we have already, but the added benefit which these assemblies don't have is the larger power behind us. And so it's an example. People want that kind of larger kind of community. They want to be in the kind of place where you're up till midnight and talking about things. And it's up to us to do what we can to let our light shine out our windows and into the larger world to say, hey, we have something better here. We're called to wake up. And sometimes we'll probably get sleepy physically and in our Christian lives. We may be distracted by the distractions of life and might even fall out that window. But so part of it is on us to keep ourselves wakeful. Part of it's on the larger church to watch out for people who might be falling asleep and to help them. And also, one final thing to take away is that even when we fall down, God is part of this equation as well, and he's there to pick us back up. Eutychus lived, Jesus lived, and so can we. And I'll just end with a reading from Psalm 121. It says, I lift up my eyes to the mountains. Where does my help come from? My help comes from the Lord, the maker of heaven and earth. He will not let your foot slip. He who watches over you will not slumber. Indeed, he who watches over Israel will neither slumber nor sleep. The Lord watches over you. The Lord is your shade at your right hand. The sun will not harm you by day, nor the moon by night. The Lord will keep you from all harm. He will watch over your life. The Lord will watch over your coming and going, both now and forevermore. Amen.